The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
I always thought my dad was a morning person. He'd be up hours before me, drinking his coffee, listening to the weather on the radio as the dawn broke. Then he'd make breakfast and get me up at the last moment possible so that I, night owl that I am, could sleep in before he would drive me over to school. A few years ago, I was talking with him about it, and I learned that he never got up that early because he enjoyed it. Getting up early was just a sacrifice that he made for the sake of work, for the sake of providing for me. Doubly hard since my mom died when I was young. We never really talked, not about anything emotional at least. He's the model of traditional masculinity. He worked in manual labor as a pipe fitter. In the United Association of Plumbers and Pipe Fitters, he always made sure to emphasize the importance of his union. He has a Harley-Davidson motorcycle that was made the same year that he was born, and he always tells us to bury him with it. And a lot of the things that he'd say, well, let's just say I'm not going to repeat them in a church. But as the saying goes, show, don't tell. And he showed me how to be the man that I am today. I remember once I wanted a new video game system, and it was expensive. But instead of outright saying no, he said that if I still wanted it in a few months, he would get it for my birthday. And surprise, surprise, by that time I had other things on my mind. So he didn't just teach me about money, but he also helped me gain some self-awareness. Helped me learn that just because I wanted something now doesn't mean that I would want it forever. He was always self-conscious, self-deprecating about the places where he felt like he fell short as a parent. By high school, he couldn't help me with my homework anymore, and he always said that I got my brains from my mom. But in preschool, when I said I was bored, he took me out, homeschooled me, so that by the time I went back in first grade, I was so advanced that I could skip ahead to second grade. Every single day, he got me to school on time. In middle school, when I decided to build a model of the Palace of Versailles for a project and bit off a bit more than I could chew, he helped me finish it. He was the one who drove me to my extracurriculars, role modeled a strong work ethic, gave me a stable household where I could study, saved money to send me to summer camp when I wanted to go to it. And even though he was there every step of the way supporting me, he always made me feel like I was self-sufficient and independent, able to succeed on my own. My whole life, he did every single thing he could to make sure that I did as well as I could academically. And when I was in college, any time we ran into somebody who talked down to him because he never got a four-year degree himself, he'd be quick to mention how well I was doing at Stanford, which was his way of saying how proud he was of me. A lot of the time when we talk about masculinity, particularly traditional notions of masculinity like my dad embodied, it's talking about the problems of toxic masculinity. But for me, it was never toxic. It was sacrifice and duty, organized labor, budgets and discipline, self-awareness, independence, humility, pride in family, stability and reliability. He taught me all of that just by being himself. Thanks, Dad.
T To be sure, norms of parenting have changed wildly in just two generations. Sarah Blaffer Hardy, a professor emerita at UC Davis, who has written a lot on motherhood and attachment, writes in her new book, Father Time, or Father Time, A Natural History of Men and Babies, of how in her childhood, she doesn't remember a man changing a diaper or much at all of her own father holding any of his five children. Fast forward to young fathers in this congregation and her own son and son-in-law, we see men who take paternity leave, bear a significant partnership role in the raising of their children, some who are the primary caregiver. And I would guess among young fathers we know, they almost all have changed far more than one diaper, and so much more. In Hardy's book, she cites new endocrinological studies and neurological studies that show that men who are in close physical contact with their children, age three and under, I suppose any children, age three and under, have the same bonding and peace-giving hormones released in their bodies as women, oxytocin, even prolactin, the hormone responsible for, well, lactation, and all of these even change men's brains the way they change women's. Which is to say that science is disproving what Darwin and so many other anthropologists and sociologists and others have promulgated as fundamental, incontrovertible truths that the sexes are hardwired for different roles. Actually, we're finding out that both are hardwired for caregiving. We just made it difficult. And all of that new finding dovetails with stories I've heard over my lifetime and my own, including my own experience of my father, my husband. And listening and asking people over the last couple weeks for stories of their own experience of fatherhood, it also dovetails with so many of those stories. To be sure, fatherhood is a diverse category of lived realities. It isn't predictable to sweep us all up under one umbrella or to capture in one perfect greeting card. And there will and should always be a spectrum, I expect, of how we might step into our lives, any of our roles that reflect who we are and who we need to be authentically the version of how we want to be in the world in these ways. And there are also fathers who are not recognized as such formally, but do the work of fathering. The only real truth that sweeps us all up around parenting is perhaps that the people who are our fathers and mothers shape us. By their presence and absence, by their love or its absence, by their flaws and their gifts, and so much else that they offer up explicitly or by showing it, they shape us. We choose who we want to be, often imitating them. We learn some of who and what we don't want to be, often in response to them and up against their example. And whether we like it or not, who they are is so deeply a part of us that some of it emerges even despite us. I was curious leading up to this Sunday how people felt they were shaped by their fathers. And also in this time when we're exploring and fighting to make room for wider notions of gender expression than we have inherited and wider notions of gender identity and gender norms, how did these fathers shape what it meant to be a man in this world? And what vision of manhood was that? So we can throw that into the mix of how we talk through reimagining this piece of our lives and our world. As I alluded to earlier, it's clear that those who father us are not always our biological fathers. We all know that. Perhaps they're not always all men. Depends on how we define what it means to father or be a father. But to simplify, I asked people about the men they grew up with as their fathers and asked, what did you learn from them? And what did you learn about what it meant to be a man? The question Sam answered. You've heard from Sam his experience, his beautiful experience. A dad who's a pipe fitter, traditional in so many ways. And as conversant as Sam is with all the notions of toxic masculinity with which he and his generation are actively interrogating and working to undo, it was not toxic at all for Sam. Maybe not for his dad, I don't know. There were and have been, of course, destructive parts of the paradigm we've handed on through generations. Professor Hardy describes her own father as a man that I would say kind of fell captive to some of the most destructive cultural norms or permissions. She describes a dad who is distant, who is domineering, and whose temper can terrifyingly erupt, even if he's merely inconvenienced by his family. But that was not actually the norm I heard in the stories I heard. Mari Magaloni Ramos talked of her dad. By the way, I have permission to tell all these stories today. A handsome, proud Mexican man who would self-declare himself macho. And she describes this man who is bigger than life and also gentle. He never even spanked us, she said. My mom did that. She thinks he would have been undone if he would have had to do the disciplining. She said how, for him, being macho included adoring your wife and showing your kids you loved them. Maybe it's safe to say, just off the sort of cuff, that the lived reality of fathers has always been so much more nuanced and beautiful than any cardboard cutout we would try to present of it. And to be fair, even saying how nuanced and what breadth there is in how we experience it, it's also fair to say there are certain patterns of expectations that fathers inherited. Fathers are still expected, I think, even as we try to undo so much and provide more freedom and breadth to make decisions about how we step into this role. They're still provided or expected to provide and protect. That came up in our conversation with the worship associates this week. In fact, in 2018, when the American Psychological Association issued new guidelines for masculinity, and we'll all have to go look these up because I'm very curious, Hardy says there was this uproar and protest and death threats to the authors. And in a Wall Street Journal opinion piece that year by a mother of three sons, she asked why we pretended masculinity is the problem, but then went on to say, the world needs strong men. Without them, who will protect the village from enemies? Expecting men alone to go to war or play a sort of violently protective role has not been fair, I think we'd all agree. And protecting our families in a world that's shaped by sexism and racism and poverty and homophobia, among other evils, well, it's impossible for a parent to protect a child in that world entirely. And it's also clear we live in a society where we're not always easily able to provide for our families. If you have a disability or are someone who's returned from jail and is trying to get a job that provides for a family, it could be nearly impossible, hence our offering this morning. So providing and protecting is complicated. But holding all of that, I heard in so many stories the thread of fathers who sought and fought to do what they could to draw a protective bubble around their kids and provide for them by the sweat of their brows, sometimes against the odds. And I want to share with you a couple of those stories. I talked to Kelly Murray and Lawrence Pulgrim this week because I knew I'd heard over the years them talking about their dads, and I wanted to be reminded and hear more. Kelly's dad grew up poor in Marin City, and he left high school before his senior year so that he could work, because he had to. He joined the Navy, and he returned from the Navy to marry his mother, a Mexican immigrant to the U.S., who he'd met actually on shore leave during his time in the Navy. Lawrence's father immigrated to the U.S., he and his brother arriving from Vienna as the sole survivors of their nuclear family after the Holocaust. Both of these men found immense meaning and purpose and pride in how they came to provide for and make a life for that was protected and safe for their families. Kelly's dad, I'm going to tell you more about each of them. Kelly's dad, when he returned from the Navy, worked as a grocer, spending most of his career as the produce manager at a store in Sebastopol that is now a quarter of a mile from a house that Kelly and Lawrence bought. Kelly's dad worked 6 days a week his entire career and only retired when the toll of work, the damage it had done to his back, finally required him to do so. But meanwhile, he had bought a house, he'd put 3 of his 5 children through college. She tells the story of him being so tired of the local newspaper always talking about other people's kids and their accomplishments and being so full of pride at his own children's accomplishments that one day he marched right into the offices of the Rohnert Park Clarion and sat down and told them all about his kids. And the paper published a big article entitled some version of "What's Happening with the Murray Kids?" He was proud of being able to provide for and provide a safe jumping off place for his kids. It was what fathers did, and it took everything he could and he had to do it. Lawrence's dad, arriving from Europe to the US, had $20 in his pocket, and of course, most of his entire family lost. He also chose to serve in the military and then put himself through college and school on the GI Bill and began a practice as an architect. A liberal Jew who joined the UU Church of Atlanta, he raised his family there in this sea of Southern conservatism, a civil rights activist in the South because he knew what it actually took to make the world safe. Lawrence's dad became a successful architect. He was eventually inducted into the Architectural Digest Hall of Fame and was a fellow of the AIA. And he was super proud of that career and the practice he built. But Lawrence said that as his dad aged, for sure, it was his family that he provided for and created that he was most proud of. My parents, including my own grandfather, or many parents, I should say, including my own grandfather, and a lot of immigrant families I've come to know over the years, talk of stories of spending weeks and months apart from their families to pursue work when there is none nearby, in this effort to provide protection and resources. Overall, these stories are this incredible, generous, and sacrificial ethic that is foisted disproportionately, though not entirely, on our men. And it says through these stories, writ large, that there is this command to sacrifice our own comfort or ease or to set it aside out of larger love and service. And I just want to hold that up on this day. It's part of what we have asked, and it has often meant, if you could do it, to be a father. Other stories I heard again and again were of the ways fathers were tender and caretaking. Because Hardy reminds us, but we all know, men are caretaking too. Tenderness, despite any exaggerated myths of masculinity, is part of what it means, and we should allow it increasingly to mean to be a man and a father. So there are all these gorgeous stories. I'm sure you have your own. Sam's father making breakfast every morning, my dad braiding my hair every day before school, all the ways fathers showed their presence, seeing their kids, trying to, we hope, and leaning in. Lawrence tells the story of his sister becoming pagan and marrying a man who was a leader in the pagan movement, still is, both of them, and having some of what their beliefs and practices were hard for his dad to understand and take in. But he comes around, Lawrence said. He sees the sincerity of his daughter's beliefs and her love for her fiancé, and eventually he offers to host the wedding in his backyard, complete with a cauldron and very unfamiliar rituals and garb. Which just made me think of how fatherhood is about seeing your kids for who they are, ideally, and working to see them, even if it's hard for you. You might even say that those who father us are those who do see us, who can see us, who bless us for who we are. But that's part of the legacy of this role we need in our lives. I think the last piece of fatherhood that I want to share that came up in stories that I loved was both the vulnerability and the ways that some fathers modeled holding strength and power that was transformative for their kids to see. And I think this is especially true in light of some of the messages and acculturation that has been less helpful in our inheritance. Men making room for their vulnerability is a particularly powerful invitation and permission, I think, to be vulnerable for all of us. It was true for me. I had a father who was an actor, so he chose a profession in which access to your emotions was a requirement. And, you know, we know, who knows why we choose our professions? Maybe there was, you know, there's always some interesting invitation in why we choose to do or enter into things. It meant, though, that he was the one who often would see and respond to how I was doing emotionally. And he was the one who would say, when I was full up with emotion, come here and wrap me in his arms and say, it will feel easier once you've cried about it. Lawrence talks about his father later in life, when his father had melted into some of his own softness and let go of some of the stoicism he understandably brought with him from his childhood, crying every time he said goodbye to his kids and grandkids. Vulnerability then is key, and so in this parallel sense, is modeling an appropriate use of power, how it's instructive, how to be strong. It's such an important lesson for all of us, but to use it with care and choice and courage. Those impressions seem to stand out for people. Kelly reminded me of a story that she told me once before that her cousin told at her cousin's father's funeral last year. Her cousin was little, she said, maybe 5 or 6. When she reached into the refrigerator to get an egg, and it slipped out of her hand and smashed on the kitchen floor, the cousin remembers being panicked, shaking, her lips starting to tremble, worrying about getting punished. And her father noticed, saw it all, and the girl held her breath as her father came over, looked down at the floor, opened the refrigerator, pulled out another egg, and dropped it on purpose on the floor, and said, "It looked like your egg needed a friend." Lawrence remembers a boys' choir performance, a very high Atlanta society moment held in the Symphony Hall downtown. And how the spotlights were so strong that night that one boy, then the next, then a third fell off the risers, fainting from heat and nervousness. And how no one did anything but his dad stood up in the Symphony Hall in the middle of the concert and yelled out, "Stop the concert! These are boys!" This was not toxic masculinity. This was strength and social courage used to serve a father's love for all the boys up there. Unapologetically against any strange notions of male stoicism, and said by someone who lost almost everything and everyone that was important and that he loved to a toxic, militaristic culture unchecked. So I wanted to celebrate this kind of fatherhood. All the conversations we're having, all the nuance, all the unfolding, the kind that teaches us what it can mean to parent. To have access to our strength and our vulnerability and have beautiful examples of how each can show up. The power and the beauty of a life that does all it can to protect and provide for others, even and especially against all the challenges to both of those acts. Parenting that lives into its own sense of what relationship and integrity and love demand against whatever norms of inheritance surround it. Informed as we all are by the culture, but not afraid to remake the roles we are asked to play to suit our hearts. And to celebrate, I hoped today, all that it can mean to make our own choices of how to father, how to mother, how to parent, whatever that means to us, and all the formal and the informal ways that life opens the doors to caretaking, that we are all hardwired for. Blessings. Blessings especially to the fathers and those who father without formal recognition here and around the world. We appreciate you. Amen.